Welcome to Trapping Radio. This is our 400th episode. And for you guys that's been along for this whole ride, I say thank you from the bottom of my heart. I'm not sure why. I'm sure I've repeated myself several times over the course of doing this many shows. And I just want to appreciate everybody for basically allowing me into your house, your car, your earbuds. I know a lot of y'all listen to me when you work, when you're not supposed to, but I appreciate that also. But a little bit excited about tonight's show is I get to talk about some people that I really, really enjoy. I'm going to talk about some different people and some of the things that I've learned from them over the years. It's just kind of a... I think it'll be interesting. I think it will be. There'll be a lot of little tips and stuff in here to pick up on. Before we do that, though, I want to thank our sponsors, which support Trapping Radio. They're the ones that make everything possible. They help with the server cost. They help get everything going. I'm sorry if I sound a little wound up. I just got done competing with a Viking press for 30 minutes before I started to do this, so adrenaline's kind of flowing. But we have the best sponsors. They take care of their customers. They appreciate that you appreciate them. They know that you go and you support them because they help support this show. We have F&T, Fur Harvesters, everything you need for trapping, hunting with hounds, and predator calling. They have great company. They have about everything you'd ever want. They make a lot of neat stuff. They sell a lot of neat stuff, but it's just super professional. Then we have Funky Trap Tags and Supplies. They make copper tags. They have a full line of trapping supply. They have all kind of stuff for deer and fish and bear and hog. Full line of predator calls. He's got all kind of cool stuff. Very professional company. Shipping's done, you know, very quickly. Give him a try if you're looking for somebody. We also have Dunlap Lures, which Jeff's a friend of mine. He's going to be coming down and seeing me before he does this Kentucky show coming up. We have some announcements we're going to be making here in a minute. But makes great lures. Him and his dad, you know, his dad started this business back in the 70s. I mean, tested and tested and tested over the years. You're not going to go wrong if you try Jeff's lures. And then we have Okie Cable and Trap out of Oklahoma, full line of trapping supplies. They sell snares. He's just one of those neat guys that has about anything that you're not sure if anybody else has. If he don't, he'll probably know somebody that does. Jeb's a really good guy to deal with, work with, and you'll really appreciate him if you start working with him. So those are the sponsors. They help keep everything moving. It's the main reason. It's not like there's a lot of money in this. It's more because I enjoy teaching, I enjoy sharing, and hopefully over these 400 episodes, I've helped you in some small way become a better trapper. Because I definitely don't know everything. I don't know the best answer all the time. I've not been in every single situation, but all I can do is share the experience that I've had over the decades that I've been doing this and all the states that I've trapped and the different weirdness that I've come across. So I hope that I've helped some guys out there with that. Now saying that, I wanna start with something which is probably gonna sound pretty crappy on the podcast, but I was out in the shop, and of course, you know, all this craziness we got going along in the world right now. And you have people that are trying to start an insurrection. You got people thinking about civil wars. And basically, the bottom line is, we've all heard the term, we surround them. Guys, don't forget that. I think Trump's doing what he's doing to let them hang themselves so people can see what it's like if they were fully in charge. I really think that's what he's doing. And it seems like it's really bleak, but things can change really, really quick. And while I was in the gym, I've got a home gym, when I was in there doing shoulders today, this came across the soundtrack, and I thought this was so fitting. So when you're starting to worry about is it just so bleak? Is there's nothing we can do about it and stuff like that? I want you to listen to the words of this song It's kind of funny. He's talking about one dude, but think about this in terms of Antifa, socialist, Marxist, all the people that's getting under your skin right now, all the PC people. Just keep this in mind, because if we decide to, we can change it in a moment. Wait a minute. That if you've never heard that, it's Justin Moore, I Can Kick Your Ass. Go listen to that with better quality. YouTube is sabbatical. I couldn't even pull it up to download it to be able to do this right. But I was just thinking about that today. If we ever decide to, it's over. And just keep that in mind. It's never as bleak as the news is telling you it is, because we can change it in an instant. Now, I just want everybody to know that we have, I think it's six or seven spots left in the second class of me and Dunlap School. You can find out all that information at wolfernation.com under a PCG store under the category Business School and Trapping School, Business Course and Trapping School. There's not many left. Guys, you're not going to want to miss out on this. We're going to do every single thing we can to make you better than we are. That's our goal. We've sat down, we've thought about it, but that's absolutely what it is. It's not to show you what we would, that we're, how good we are. It's to get you to that point and turn you loose on your own trap line. Now, the other thing that I want to talk about is something that me and Jeff is doing right after the school. We're going to hold a Trapping Mafia Fun, Steel, and Fur Day for 2 days at the campground. It's in Iowa. You can go look at the school and get all that pertinent information. We're going to talk about this more. It's kind of southern Iowa. It's not far from Missouri. It's not far from Illinois. It's not that far from Kentucky, Nebraska, different places. It's going to be that first weekend in October. We're going to use this to see, for one, if it's something we ever want to do again, just to be honest with you. Two, we want this to be the best convention, fun-wise and entertaining-wise and learning-wise, you have ever went to. This is not a standard trapping convention by any stretch of the imagination. You got the vendors set up on the tables and they're sitting back here trying to, you know, talk you into buying something. You've got everybody running around trying to push politics of the state or the national. There won't be any of that at this convention. This is strictly an old school style rendezvous. We're going to have demos in a lot different ways. We're probably going to do some stuff, which I'll talk about later, coming up, that you've never seen demos done like this before. it's going to be pretty interesting. And at night, I've got to confirm this with the campground, but we want to have a big bonfire both nights, where, and instead of everybody running back to their motel or something like that, we sit around and actually act like friends and family and trappers, the way that it used to be in a rendezvous where people wanted to get to know each other. It's not just coming to buy product. It's not just coming to learn something at a demo. It's coming to be brothers at a convention. That's what we want to do. Now, me and Jeff are pretty creative, but me and Jeff's only two people. And we know that there's a lot smarter of you out there than there is of us. So if you go to Trapping Talk, Jeff is going to be posting. If he already has not posted, he'll have the dates and stuff like that on there. We want to know what you think should be done at a trapping convention. Now, this first year, it's not going to be a tremendously amount of a huge amount of vendors, because we have no idea what we're getting into. We don't want to overpromise anybody. We don't want to do anything like that as far as people spending money to get tables to come to the show. We have no idea what it's going to be. So we're going to keep the vendor list kind of small, but I promise you, anything that you need, you're going to be able to get there. I know right now, me and Jeff's going to be there. Chip Davis is going to be there with Expand-A-Pans, and Hilltop Outdoors and Funky Trap Supplies, they're bringing a boatload of stuff down there. Save on shipping. Alan's a good guy, sponsor of both of my podcasts. And we're probably going to have some other people, but we're going to do this a little bit different. I'm keeping this as real as I can for you. We're going to try to make sure you can get whatever you need if you come, but you don't have 50 different of the same thing. You know, it's not like you got 50 different people selling fish oil or something like that. That's not what this is going to be like. This is more of actual rendezvous coming to be together to have a good time. Not just supplies, not just politics, or not just any of that type stuff, but a real, like, one of the things we're looking at, like say on Friday night, we might close the door at 5. Anybody that wants to go with me and Jeff and hit the road and go out and talk about trap locations, y'all get involved with it. This is not a lecture type thing. But we'll go, we'll look at water, we'll look at land, we'll pick out coyote locations, we'll pick out mink locations, we'll let you show stuff we probably missed. It would be cool to me if we had 65 four-wheel drive trucks, rednecks, beards, flannel shirts, and t-shirts going down the road like a freaking convoy to go look at trap locations. We can all make each other smarter. That's some of the stuff we're thinking about doing. That may cause a traffic jam, and I'm not sure exactly how safe that is, but think of how fun that would be. Have you ever done that at a trapping convention? Heck no, you haven't. Because we're looking to improve. If we do this again, we want to improve it and improve it and improve it. Now, to do that, we need you to let us know what you're looking for. Now, if you're looking for cocaine and strippers, we can't help you. But if you're looking for something different on activities or demos in certain ways, or maybe have some time where individuals get to make sets and maybe me or Jeff kind of walk them through maybe what we would do different. Very different than I would just want to have a demo area where you go to and it's like a lecture hall, basically, where you're on dirt. That's what I'm trying to get away from. And I want to build camaraderie in between and after the show between trappers. It needs to be, and I think it should be, where you can't wait to come back and see everybody again next time. Where it's not just trying to save a little bit of money on shipping. We want to make it where it's an event that you want to come to. If you're going to be interested, first weekend of October, Southern Iowa, you can go look at the school information, because it's at the same campground. We're going to have a full-size gymnasium for vendors. It's going to be air-conditioned. There is some hookups for campers. You need to do reservations for those through the campground, which I'll get you more of that information. Be plenty of tent camping. If you want to come and tailgate, bring it, brother. Bring it all down there and sell whatever you can sell. If you are one of the guys that have like a food type, you know, making ice cream or lemonades or, you know, that stuff that everybody seems to really love at the conventions, if you do that, get in contact with me. We'll make it very worth your while to come down there. We want people to be so freaking happy when they leave. They're already counting the days to next year. And if we can't pull it that off exactly this year, after we get some feedback and different stuff, we're going to try to build the most fun, the most educational, and the most entertaining convention you as a trapper have ever been to. But we need your help. So what are you looking for? What would you like to see? What would help you? What would help make it more entertaining possibly? So go to Trapping Talk on Facebook, or you can email me at Clint@WolferNation. Me and Jeff's going to keep these. If you come up with 10 ideas, put them out there. If you come up with one the week after, put it out there. Like I said, we want this to be as much involved with you as it is with us. We want this to actually be a togetherness, not a bunch of petty stuff and different things like that. So first weekend of October, Southern Iowa, Trapping Mafia is going to have their own show. We want you to be there. We want you to have a good time, and we want you to learn as much as you can. So if you're thinking that maybe you didn't get to go to a show this year, this may be the one that you want to come to, because it's going to be a lot different. So we will see y'all then, and we will talk more and more about this because we're still nailing down all the details. I know it's not a long time to plan for this, but I think it's going to be something that you're going to want to be a part of. Okay. Being the 400th episode, I thought I would talk about people that I've learned from. And I want to start off with a negative. I know that's probably not the correct way in the business courses of the world to do, but I've learned from a couple of people a lot that has really helped me, even though it was not easy to go through at the time, that may help you in the future. So I've got three X's down here because I don't want to mention names because I'm not doing this to beat anybody up. One is a good guy, two are not exactly bad guys, but some bad things happen that I learned from. So Mr. 2X is somebody that I got involved with that's very big in the deer industry. I guarantee you a lot of you know the name if I were to say it. But what it taught me is if you're too hungry, you do stupid things. That's what it teaches you. That's what it taught me. The carrot and stick is an illusion that a lot of very wealthy people in the deer industry use to sucker hardworking, hungry people to get free stuff, and they will suck you dry. If you let them. So, you know, we come trap here for free and I'll get you some more land. Go trap for them for free and they'll get you more land. You know, well, I can't pay you what you're charging. I mean, look at, you can say that you're trapping here and look how much business that'll get you. And trust me, guys, that all sounds really good and fine until you got to pay your bills. Because what you find out in that level of industry with guys like that are scratching just as hard as you, even though you don't realize it, everybody tries to figure out a way to take advantage of somebody else. So the lesson is, you have a payday that they agree to, or you're going to have a carrot. You know, think about the cartoons. You put the carrot in front of the donkey, he walks forever thinking he's going to get the carrot. But guess what? He never gets the carrot. So if someone puts a carrot in front of you, this is what I've learned. Run. Run. If they're not willing to pay you to do what they said, and then it's always about the future, run. It's carrot. Now, the other is Mr. Triple X. It's just the way I've got it written down. This is something I've learned actually from several people. This could be several people. And I'm being as open and as honest as I can be with anybody that's listening to this. Wherever you're at, when you're in any type of business, or especially in the trapping side, you're always, if you're in the business side of it all, you're always reaching to try to find new profit streams. And a lot of times, the way a lot of people look at it is if they can get, you know, hook up with somebody that's more well known than them, that they think that gives them advantage. And it possibly could. I've had people wanting to do DVDs with me and me pay for it all, and they get half the money and no one knows who they are. And when you say no, they get all upset. It's just the way some people think. Now, the biggest lesson that I learned from Mr. Triple X is it's not a good move to do business with people that aren't at least on the same level as you are in financing. Let me say that again. The biggest lesson from him was you don't do business, partnership-wise business, with other people that aren't at least on the same plane with you financially. If you're both broke, you're both broke. If one's a little bit more broke than the other, it's probably not a big deal. But if one is actually pretty successful, and all of a sudden someone that is broke wants to be part of what you're doing, you need to be very cautious. There's something about money in trappers that go to places that I do not understand. If you're going to do business with people that don't have as much money as you, whatever that level is, you need to really, really find out what their character is. Because I've got some friends now that aren't on the same money field as me, and it is perfect because there's no jealousy. The jealousy is what gets people just crazy. And you end up hurting a friendship or a possible friendship or a possible partner because you don't take into account the human nature of greed. See, I've got friends now that if one were to call up and say they just made a $300,000 deal with Cabela's, I would be so freaking happy. Not how can I be part of it, not how can I do what they did, not anything. I would be really honestly happy that they had that. But what I found out in the past, because like an example is, you know, 15 years ago, I'm going to a convention, I start becoming known, people started buying a lot of DVDs and lure, and you come from the show that they're at and they're selling their stuff, but no one really knows who they are, and they see that you made 10 times more money than they did. And you can watch it eat at them like acid. But if it's two guys that are making about the same, it's no big deal. If it's somebody else that has plenty of income in another way, it's no big deal. Does this make sense? I'm not sure if I'm you know, putting this in the right ways. But be very careful with partnerships, and you got to be careful with friends too. You got to find friends that aren't going to be jealous. And I've got a group of those guys right now. No one cares. No one knows about money or income or profit, or if it came out that one's doing better than the other, everybody in that group is going to be happy for that other one. But if there was one in that group that's going to start letting that eat at them, it's going to become a problem somewhere down the road. And these became very big problems for me. So that's just a lesson that I learned from Mr. Triple X. So we got the negative out of the way. Let's talk a little bit about the positive. Probably the biggest influence on me and the guy that I learned the most from was Craig O'Gorman. I studied all of his videos, as long-winded and as blurry as they were. I read his books frontwards and backwards to the point I could almost hear his voice on the trap line when I'm seeing a situation that he's covered. One thing when I went out and took instruction from Craig, is it was very different than being around a lot of the guys I've been around that trap, because at that time I was trying to be a true professional. I was trying to figure all that out. And it was so different with Craig's mindset and his operation, the way the equipment was, his schedule, his long-term plans, his short-term plans. It was very more militaristic than I thought trapping would be for somebody like that. And for most people, it's just something you do for fun, and you kind of think about something, you just go do it. And the way that you rig your truck and everything was for production from Craig. Everything. The way you met Craig was actually a production. So you know that you're not dealing with a normal person. But his true professionalism of day in and day out, because I went out there twice, spent 1 week with him one time and 2 days the next, and it never changed. It was production and catching and killing coyotes at pretty much any cost. And it was obsessive with it. But it was obsessive in the way that he went about it. Not just he was excited about it. It was he would think about it. He would study studies. He would read old books. He would read new books. He would talk to people. He would pick everybody's brain. He was always looking for just one more piece of information to put in the puzzle. Professionalism, that's what I got from Craig. Now, the other person had a big impact on me was Johnny Thorpe. Took instruction from him. I talked to him several times, went up to his place a couple of times and different things. The thing about Johnny was simplicity. He didn't really probably trap much different in the 2000s as he did in 1950. He was very mindful of not using a lot of equipment. He could trap out of his coat. He would go about his line and prepare stuff year round. He would prepare sets for other trappers just so he knew where they were. He was extremely intelligent about the human animal. And he learned how to take advantage of that to always stay one or two steps ahead. But his simplicity of a nail, a trap, a drill, and some lure in his pocket was amazing. His simplicity of blind setting for cats. He didn't get worked up on all the stuff that everybody, and me included, can get worked up on, where we think all these little minute details are important. Simplicity. Randy Smith, which is also going to be given a demo next year at the NTA. He's one that I don't really know how to describe Randy. Most people, when they meet him, don't really think it's Randy Smith. They see him in the videos, and he's always has his coveralls on and stuff like that. But at a convention, What most people have said about Randy is he looks like an accountant. And I'm like thinking, yeah, it's accountant you don't want in your trapping area. See, what I learned from Randy is a single-mindedness of almost like a machine, even in some ways more than Craig, when it comes to a way of trapping. He's so focused. The first time that I went with him to Maryland, we were setting traps when within 30 minutes of both getting into the state. We put our gear up later. We were skinning fur within 13 hours. Watching him skin an animal, if you've never seen combines and coyotes before, watching a human being not waste one single movement off skinning a coyote off a tailgate in about 3 minutes is something to behold. But everything Randy does is that way. He's got a gift where he can take any wasted movement out of the equation. And it's like he's got it down. It's like a machine. It is literally like watching a high-performance machine. And the funny thing about Randy is he can do that day after day after day after week after week after week. He likes trapping with partners. A lot of times on coyote lines, he's got to shuffle them in and out every 3 or 4 days. Because normal humans like me and you can't handle it. He just keeps rocking. Red O'Hearn out of Iowa. When he went out with me and we rode around, he was explaining to me coon trapping. What I learned from Red, beyond anything else, again, was simplicity. But number two is know thy animal better than your competition. And when it comes to raccoons, Red has made great videos. He writes really good books, super information. But there's no way in those type of formats that you can really get a true grasp on raccoon locations the way that he showed me. Because 80%, this is in Iowa, when coon prices were pretty good. Trappers everywhere. And 80% of the actual locations we set, there was not another single trapper on. Let that sink in a minute. The man that knocks out 1,000 every 2 weeks, he's trapping on places that everybody else is driving by at 65 miles an hour. And, you know, one thing about Red, if you get to know him, he's kind of like a very upbeat, very quick-witted guy that sees through the BS really quick. And that's the way he treats his trapping. He gets rid of stuff that doesn't work. But he knew his animal better than his competition. Now, Don Bolte is somebody I've never met. The only place I know to find information on him is in Craig O'Gorman's High Rolling Coon book. Actually, Red and went out and actually rode along with Don Bolte. I want you to keep in mind, this was back in a time where the heroes of the coon world were catching 300 a year. And there was, in Nebraska, there was this guy running around doing his own thing that set very different from everybody else. But his mind looked at locations on a percentage basis like gambling. So that's what I picked up from him. So when I talk about, I don't normally set two traps at a coyote location, I've learned that from Don Bolte, even though I've never met him, and I wish I would have. So what I learned from him, if you got an average of 8 coon on a creek, what are most people going to do? They're going to set 8 to 10 traps. Well, how many of those can you set up in a day? Not very many. Don Bolte looked at it the complete opposite. You got 8 coon coming down a creek. If he sets 2 traps, he's got 8 coon trying to get into 2 traps, where everybody else has got 8 coon trying to get in 8 or 10 traps. But the difference on the numbers of Don Bolte was he did this on a level because he was only setting 2 traps with a very efficient system that you couldn't keep up with him the other way. And he was well over the 1,000 coon mark back before anybody thought that was even possible. He looked at the actual locations the way a gambler would look at making a move in a casino. And he wanted everything to be in his favor, because it's easier to put 2 coon. Think about if you set 100 bridges and you got 8 coon trying to get into 2 traps and you're averaging 2 coon a bridge, but not every night 8 coon's going to come down through there. So if you got 8 traps there, you can't set as many. He's running probably 4 times as many bridges, but catching singles and doubles at every single one and throwing coon in the back of the truck just as fast as he can. It's a very interesting way to look at this. Now, the next one I'm going to mention is Albert Simpson. Some of y'all know him from my videos. He's older than I am. He's been actually out catching me on cats down in Texas. I am so proud of Albert. He's also going to be giving a demo at the NTA. He's pretty shy. I don't know what that's going to be like, but I think he'll pull it off somehow or another. Maybe we need to get him caffeined up or liquored up or sugared up or something. But Albert has got a unique way of looking around and absorbing information. When you see him at conventions a lot of time, you'll find him in the most comfortable chair that's left open. He doesn't talk a whole lot, which is different in a trapping convention, because most people are always trying to tell you what they know. Well, see, Albert knows what he knows. Albert now knows what I know. Albert knows what a lot of people know. Andy knows what he knows. But most people are talking, and when someone else is talking to them, they're already coming up with an answer to show how much more they know. Albert doesn't play that game. He picks up stuff from everybody. And he just goes out and he does it consistently. I've never seen a man at that age that can work at that pace. And if you're going to get him to come in for lunch, you're going to have to lasso him when we were down in Texas. And you never saw the man before dark, ever. Because there was always another place to put a trap, straighten out a snare, something like that. But watching Albert listen to people and not want to be the center of attention has now got Albert probably, because no one really knows, he's probably the highest number cat trapper today in America. Jeff Dunlap. What I've learned from him is it's okay not to attack. See, years and years ago, Jeff would go all over the country with basically enough money to get there. He would eat nasty food out of cans, stay in places most possums would be afraid to stay into. And he worked his butt off. And if you know anything about Jeff, Jeff's got two modes. Attack, and when he attacks, it's like a rabid dog. It's full on. But as me and Jeff got older, I got to watch Jeff. And Jeff could go to attack mode, or not, and be fine with either one. What do I mean by that? I've been with Jeff when we run a bunch of stuff, we catch stuff, but there's time to go get a coffee, and there's time to stop by and check on the grandkids, and there's time, you know, to go by and see if somebody else is okay, or maybe even go check somebody else's traps because they're working, just because they're not going to have time to. And he can have just as good of time in not attack mode as he can in attack mode. And that is actually, to be honest, helped me to understand that it's okay not to be in attack mode. It's not always easy, especially when you first start, because you think everything's got to be hardcore, everything. When we go to Arkansas, there's a lot of stuff caught, but that is not attack mode. That is like a brother's trip, and it's totally fine. Next, we'll talk a little bit about Tom Miranda. I've met him, I've interviewed him. That's a great interview if you've never heard it. But one thing about Tom, even before I ever met him, before I ever, you know, made this into a lifestyle or a income, I remember watching him, and he just had a way of being ahead of competition on a lot of different things. I don't really think he was probably, and he would probably tell you the same thing, he was ever the best trapper. But he was probably one of the most profitable trappers. And that's kind of what I learned from him. Now, the next guy, some of y'all have seen his videos on my YouTube. We've done a lot together. He's got a Tactical 5x5 DVD, and that's Scott Adams. Scott is an interesting character. The thing about Scott is, he's had some physical issues, health issues, and everything. But you want to watch somebody, you want to learn work ethic, watch Scott on a trap line. It doesn't matter what needs to be done, he's willing to do it. He has a phrase all the time that he actually helped me with, and it was, profit is not a dirty word. Another thing from him is loyalty. You can take this back to Jeff Dunlap. He's super loyal to his friends. And if he can help, he's going to do everything in his power to do that. And if you want to have good friends, think about that. He's tough. I mean, when we were down in some of the hill country of Texas doing the hogs, and we're like, there's no way to get a Jeep anywhere up the whole side of that ridge to see if there's hogs coming through there. Before I even knew it, he'd throw a rucksack on and be walking up 1,100 feet. And the next day he would do it and go check them and check them and check them all the time. And he never, ever gave up or hope. There was always a way with him. You kept twisting things and turning things until you made it work. But this is work ethic. Now, D Scruggs is somebody you don't know. And I met him one day in Marion County, coming out of this little bitty creek. And I've only been working for the county at that time doing beaver work for maybe a month. And most of the time when you pop out of the woods and someone's sitting there with a truck, they're going to start talking about it, their dogs or something. And it's usually not very good. Dee didn't know me from Adam. And he ended up being such a good friend. But see, D, what I learned from him is, I don't know how to say this. He was going to love you regardless if you didn't treat him exactly the same way back. He was a man's man. without a doubt. But with Dee, it was something, it was special. When I came out of those woods, he lit up like a Christmas tree. He walked over to me, stuck his hand out, told me who he was. I'm on the defensive side. I think I was carrying two beaver at the time. I put him down. We got to talking. And he started talking about his dad trapped back in the Depression and, you know, and stuff like that. Within probably a week, we were inseparable for several years. He was always finding land. He never wanted a penny from fur. You couldn't give him any money. He would go out and trap some too, and he'd bring by the fur, never cared. His whole existence was to be helpful to somebody else. And that's rare. But what I learned from Dee is one day we were in his old CJ Jeep. We're going up on top of this mountain to a friend's where they had a few beaver and a bunch of coyotes. And, you know, he's talking about this, that, and the other. He gets quiet. And he's much older than me. And he looks over at me. He goes, "Clint, can I give you some advice?" Which he never really says anything like that. And I go, "Sure." He goes, "I think you need to quit selling what you catch and start selling what you know." And I remember thinking, what does that mean? I mean, how do I take that information exactly? What exactly does he mean? And he goes, "I've been around a lot of outdoorsmen. I've never seen anybody catch fur like you. I've never heard of anybody catching fur like you. And you know how to catch the fur. That's obvious because we would drag in truckloads of fur together." He said, "But I think your best option is to find ways to sell what you know instead of what you catch." That's what led me to making my first DVD, the Art of Beaver Control. I didn't know how to do it. That was back in VHS. I didn't know anything. It got me to write books. It got me to start doing students. It got me to do the schools. And now it's got me this crazy idea that we're going to do a Trapping Mafia convention. But that all started one morning in a Jeep from a guy that didn't want nothing from me. To have a better life than I was just chasing fur. It meant a lot. Now Blackie was a good friend of mine. Carol Black was actually his name. His nickname was Blackie. He passed away a few years ago. I've got an interview with him on Trapping Radio that if you haven't heard it, you owe it to yourself to go listen to it. But the thing about Blackie, once I got to know him, is there was a couple of things. One is there's more to life than trapping. Because he had weird, obsessive things he was interested in. He loved bodybuilding. And I can say I think he was 66. He had a power rack in his lure shed, which lo and behold, I guess I've repeated that process because I've emulated him that way. And at that age, he could still bench 275 pounds. And he was built like a bull. He also loved not just Elvis impersonators. He could talk about philosophy. He could talk about anything you wanted to talk about. He loved military. He loved performance vehicles. He did this. But it didn't have to always be just about trapping. And I think that's an important lesson for all of us. The other thing about Blackie was he, in a different way, he went about his trapping, and he would plan it out like it was D-Day. And that's not an exaggeration. He camouflaged the inside of his buckets. He made his vehicles, he turned them into high-performance off-road vehicles. Heavier suspensions, better airflow, more power. The way he went to the water every day, you thought he was going in to break somebody out of prison. He would, his wife would drop him off, and he would pick a place that no one would ever put a canoe in, because he didn't want anybody to know where he was at. He would never use a light unless it was absolutely necessary. He trapped a lot at dark. He did everything but put face paint on. He never mentioned that he did, but I would not be surprised if one of those, there's not a picture somewhere his wife took where he was actually had face paint on. He was emphatic on running his line with nobody knowing what he was doing. Now, the other guy's Ed Blue, and he taught me two things. One is a coffee can, and the other one is what I coined with him, the Lewis and Clark syndrome. But the coffee can was an interesting thing. When we went out to New Mexico the first time, we get in the truck, and we're leaving, and we're talking, we're all excited, after we get everything loaded up. And he pulls out a coffee can and sets it in between us. And he goes, "We need to keep track of how much it costs to get to New Mexico." I'm like, "Okay." "And we need to track how much it costs to eat between here and New Mexico, and how much the motels are between here and New Mexico. And when we get to New Mexico, we're going to add all that up, and we're going to put that money in this can. And then when we run out of money, we know we can get home." That's the way he ran his trap lines. The other thing with him that was frustrating for me at the time, but I've learned it's probably a good thing, is he had this thing where he had, I guess it was wanderlust, I call it the Lewis and Clark syndrome. He always had to see what was on the other side of the hill. And at that time, I was in absolute attack mode on everything. And it used to drive me insane. But what it taught me is, if you don't ever look what's on the other side of the hill, you're missing out in the world. And if you look on the other side of the hill, sometimes you find a lot hotter location than you're trying to run away from to get to the next one. It was just, it was a very different way of looking at trapping. To him, it was an adventure, not just about money. With him, it was to experience the trap line, experience the culture, experience the new place, not just about the money. And then the last one I'm going to talk about is what I'm going to call Mr. X. Mr. X lives in a southern state. I started trapping for him, and he had no reason to do this except he was trying to pay success forward, I guess. And he sat me down one day, and he drilled me on a bunch of business questions about my business. And I had no idea where this was coming from. And then at night, he showed up with computers where I was staying, which was his lodge. And we went over hours of stuff about business. He's a very wealthy guy. He didn't have to do that. He didn't have to spend one precious moment of his time helping a redneck trapper out, because I knew a lot about trapping, but I didn't know a whole lot about business. And he did that because it was the right thing to do in his mind. And I think he's right. So I guess the lesson from that is, if you can help somebody, you need to do it. because you never know how much that can mean and how much that can help somebody else. Well, guys, that's just a short list. That's not an everything list. I mean, I could have talked about many other trappers. If someone's not on the list, it's not because I think less of them. It's just the first ones that popped up in my head. And there's a lot of lessons there that I think trappers can use. Be better people, be better trappers, and smarter in business. And I hope it helps you in some small way. And I will talk to y'all next week.